on, right? And he goes, yeah, I love it. And he's on my number seven. I said, cool, well, we're going to see him tonight. And he looked at me like, what? And we're out in Millington. I said, yeah, you've never been to a concert. It's time to get your feet wet. I've got tickets. Let's go. And so, yeah, my thanks to Danny Bruns and the people at one of our rock and roll stations across the way, the Max, and the people at Minglewood. But he got to the front row. A lot of people were very supportive, and the drummer threw him a drumstick. So
oh, yeah.
He felt like a big deal. And I'm like, dude, by the way, it doesn't happen like every concert.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah. Buddy, cherish that. That's not what happens, yeah.
When I take you to see, like, Def Leppard or Journey, if you don't get a drumstick, don't be pissed. But it was fun. And Connor and I talked about it. Connor was bummed. But, yeah, it's fun. And I'm telling you guys that because these are the things you have to look forward to, whether it's a son or a daughter. Those are the types of memories that, you know, you can do all the Disney trips and stuff like that, which we do. But those are things that I encourage everybody to get their kids out, hear some live music, and enjoy time together.
Yeah, sweetie, listen, you can go ride Space Mountain, but there's going to be nothing like getting a pic from Tom DeLonge at your Blink-182, your first Blink-182 show when you'll be about seven, hearing words you should never hear.
No doubt about it. But when I looked over and he had the pinky finger and the forefinger with the thumb on the two fingers giving the rock
out, oh, yeah,
and banging his head last night, I put it up on Instagram. I was like, all right, this is a good moment right here.
All right, buddy. Appreciate it, man.
All right, guys.
That is Eric Hasseltine. Program brought to you by our good friends over at Birdies. October is Golftober at Birdies, and that means that if you book online, golfatbirdies.com, you'll get half off the standard rates all month long. Now is also the right time to book your holiday party or event at Birdies because dates are filling up quickly. However, if you reserve in Golftober, you will get the half off rates even if the party happens in November or December. Also, Saturday, they will be supporting Courage Through Cancer. So the first 100 people that order a delicious beer or cocktail, if you're one of the first 100 people to order on Saturday, you'll get a free breast cancer awareness shirt from Birdies. So it's a good look. Go check it out. They've got the shirts posted over on Instagram at Birdies901. Don't forget about the membership options. $100 a month will get you 10 hours on the simulator plus additional discounts. Golfatbirdies.com. They'll be open at Saturday and Sunday at 9 a.m. When we come back, let's get into the list. I want to talk about the story that Cobb wrote yesterday about the rule change in college football. Also get into the coaches' salaries. We'll do all that when we come back right here on Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM. Yes.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Yeah. Coming up in about 20 minutes, Jason Smith's going to join the program. We'll get his thoughts on what we saw from the Tigers earlier this week and a few other topics. But before we do that, let's get into the list. Ja Morant and Marcus Smart. Yeah, this is from DeMichael Cole over at the CA. The Memphis Grizzlies will get some reinforcements back ahead of their preseason finale against Miami on Friday night. Grizzlies star Ja Morant and defensive leader Marcus Smart are expected back in the lineup, Grizzlies coach Taylor Jenkins said on Thursday. Morant has missed the last three preseason games while dealing with ankle soreness. Smart has been held out of the previous two matchups dealing with a knee contusion. Although Smart and Morant will be back, the projected starting lineup still isn't complete. Jaren Jackson Jr. will remain out due to a hamstring injury. Jackson, of course, first suffered the injury during the team's first practice in Nashville 2 weeks ago, a injury that Taylor Jenkins described as a, quote, low-grade hamstring strain. The plan is still for Jackson to be available for the season opener on Wednesday at Utah. He'll go through 2 days of what Jenkins described, quote, high exposure, end quote, activities. That's a new one, Cobb. That's a new Taylor Jenkinsism. What are the three P's again? Pace. We got the three P's. It's like pace, purpose. I've got to start. We've got to start keeping like a list of Taylor Jenkins' terms.
When I was on the beat, the word he used a lot was inordinate. It was an inordinate this, an inordinate that. I think he might have moved away from it, inordinate, a little bit. He was heavy on the inordinate train there for a while.
Of course, we've always got take your vitamins. You know, that's your fundamentals, endo work.
You know what, though? I actually appreciate the vitamins thing, resonates with me. Because when I think about it, you take a vitamin every day, because you think over the course of time it'll improve your health. Taking your vitamins once isn't going to do anything.
No, but you got to do it every day.
That's right. But if you put in that work every day, which is what he calls the vitamins, then it shows up over time. So if you really drill it down, you're like, okay, I kind of see where this Ivy League man is coming from.
No, I've always felt like he's a football coach trapped in a basketball coach's body.
The cliches, yes. Yeah, it was tough. So I covered JB Bickerstaff's tenure, and then also Taylor Jenkins, and JB was a lot more conversational in his approach to dealing with the media. And then when we got Taylor Jenkins, I was like, all right, this is kind of more like the college football coach approach, which I'm actually more accustomed to. Taylor's an interesting cat.
Yeah, you could just ask JB a question,
right?
You know what I mean? It's fine. I like Taylor. I think he does a pretty good job. It's just like, as long as you ask JB, it didn't even have to be a good question. It just had to be decent. He'd give you a pretty fair answer. It's just don't insult my intelligence.
Well, so my takeaway from this, though, that Zach Edey and Jaren Jackson Jr. are likely going to play their first game together on opening night. If Jaren's not going to play in the preseason finale, that's not ideal, especially when you consider that Jaren went out very early in training camp and probably didn't get a whole lot of reps with Zach. I mean, I have no idea what their amount of work over the summer looked like together and what sort of chemistry they might have been able to develop prior to camp. But I don't think it's ideal for those two guys who were already sort of curious, how it's going to work with them on the floor together, for them to get that first real game experience on opening night. Adds a little bit of drama, adds a little bit of intrigue. I don't think it's necessarily what you want.
I think that's fair. In the end, is it the world's biggest concern? No, but you probably would prefer their first reps not to be night one.
Right. Nonetheless, though, this is an encouraging report. The fact that you're going to get Ja available for that preseason finale, don't play him that much. Honestly, I feel like most Grizzlies fans would almost be okay if they were like, nah, we ain't even going to play Ja because it's still just a preseason game. I get it. You want him to get his legs underneath him again before the real thing starts. But man, they are just so snake bitten with injuries that you almost want them to just take it overly cautious and hold him out too, if they're going to hold Jaren out. So yeah, I mean, it's good news that they're back healthy, but a part of me is almost just like, why even risk it?
I just feel like I'm at the spot, speaking of being back on a college football beat, I just feel like I'm at that spot where you're 3 weeks into camp, you've just done nothing but watch the same practice and scrimmage. Get me to opening night. I felt like this year everyone tried to make preseason a thing, and it still
because
just
they were installing a new offense, right? So I think that's what it was.
And you got to see Edey again, because we hadn't seen, the little that we saw in summer league was encouraging, but it was very little. And I just felt like in general, it's not just Grizzlies fans. Because I actually think Grizzlies fans, I would say we've had a pretty good offseason. We had multiple player rankings come out, and we didn't act like it was the end of the world. We didn't go, everybody hates us, whatnot. I thought that was maturity and growth. Nobody got in trouble. Huge part of it. But also, I think everybody's kind of in the same spot, which is, hey, we still think this team's good, but they got to go out and go out and earn it. You know what I mean?
Right, so the preseason was valuable from getting to see Zach Edey look good against semi-competent NBA competition. Now, I am still curious Like, what does it look like when he's up against a Joel Embiid or a Nikola Jokic or one of these rare players that can actually body him up on the block? Because he encountered that so infrequently. And like, you see him yam on Isaiah Jackson of the Pacers, but that's not a guy who's physically equipped to handle him in the post. So like, I do still have questions about, because it's looked to me like the last couple preseason games, like they've been really intentional about beating him on the block, yeah. Which I wasn't sure how much they were actually going to do that. Because when you listen to all the theories and concepts about the Grizzlies and the way they're going to play offense this year, there's a lot of sort of vague ideas about how you don't really run actions and sets and there's no concrete plan. Well, you kind of have to be intentional about getting the ball to a post player on the block. And they've seemed to do that. And he's dominated the guys who aren't physically equipped to compete with them. But once it gets into the regular season and they go up against some of these more physically imposing bigs, I am curious to see whether or not they actually dump the ball to Zach Edey on the block.
I think beyond the obvious of who stays healthy, I think the thing I'm most curious about is, okay, what does it look like with Zach Edey? Like, is there going to be... Because the last two games, there clearly was an emphasis of let's get him the ball, get him the ball in the paint, and he's going to be like we're essentially building the offense around him. Something he's very comfortable doing because that's basically what yes. It was at Purdue. But are you really going to do that with Ja Morant, Desmond Bane, Marcus Smart, and Jaren on the floor? Probably not. But I think they're also they've been holding back a few things like. I still expect at some point we see what we kind of saw early in summer league when we got a look at him, more of that setting the screen at the top of the key to get your point guard going downhill, create some more space, lob opportunities. Like I think that's what I'm most curious about is like how do they use him on the offense? How much do they use him? Because maybe it's literally just going to be like, hey, when the starters are on the floor, like he's there to get rebounds and to be a physical rim presence, another rim presence, but I have no idea.
And then defensively too, when games are on the line and there's actually something to be gained from drawing Zach Edey away from the basket and putting him in the pick and roll position as a five from a defensive standpoint, like our team's going to be able to exploit him in that way. I don't know that I've seen him as a drop defender in a ton of pick and roll situations during the preseason. I mean, teams are trying to run stuff, get different players acclimated. They're not necessarily repping a lot of like late game, late clock situations, but those are where the questions are with Zach Edey as a defender, especially once you start playing against some more versatile bigs that have the 3-point shot in their arsenal. I mean, can you kind of, you know, how's he going to cope and manage with that? Because the lateral quickness is still a concern. But I will say, man, he looks great getting up and down the floor, which I always said this. Like, I have my questions about Zach Edey. I still do. But, like, you can't knock the guy's conditioning. Like, he played 35-ish minutes a game for Purdue. Yeah, it was at a slower pace than what the Grizzlies are going to run. But, like, clearly he's in the physical condition needed to play the five in this system, which is a big part of this system, is having a five who can actually run the floor because, I mean, they are going at a absolutely torrent pace out there, and he seems to be okay with it.
Well, and, hey, best ability is availability. Dude was always available for Purdue.
No kidding. Yeah, durability is a thing with him. He's a reasonably good free throw shooter for his size. He has good hands. He can catch the basketball. He's coordinated. Love the fact that he grew up playing... Yeah, he's got that hook. You know, it just looked like the hook, like I'm nitpicking here, but like in the NBA, like is that hook going to come within 6 feet of the basket? Or because it looks to me like in the preseason, like he's kind of getting pushed out a little bit further out towards the free throw line when he posts up because guys are more physical. Like you're not sure. Going up against some 6'8 junior from the Big Ten who was a 3-star prospect or whatever. Like you're going up against NBA guys. And like it's all about where he gets the ball too. Because if he gets the ball at the basket, he's lethal. But, I mean, you know, if he gets pushed out off the block a little bit, then, you know, I'm not so sure how efficient he's going to be.
I mean, I'm not putting him in the same category as Embiid, but I did think a huge part of everybody buying into Edey was what he did against Klingon in the championship game. Because Klingon, I thought, for the most part, played really good defense on him, like made him make tough shots, got into foul trouble. Like, I think that's what changed a lot of people's opinions on Edey, because I think there's so much questioning, and I think it's rightfully so, to your point. It's like, how many bodies in college basketball could actually match up with him?
Right.
Well, we do know Klingon was one, and when they went head-to-head, like, because that's the thing, it's like, I thought Klingon played awesome in that first half, and you look up and Edie had 19. It was like he was just making so many tough, tough shots. Wow. Breaking news. All right. Tony Bennett. Okay, so Field of 68, Jeff Goodman has just tweeted out, Virginia head coach Tony Bennett is retiring.
Memphis is at Virginia on December the 18th.
This timing's weird.
Very weird. Bizarre. You don't see it. You don't see it on the eve of the season.
Well, usually this is health related.
Right. It's got to be something unorthodox. You don't just decide.
Right.
On the
because
eve of the
season. Why would you not? If you. What is. Like, usually, like, when you do that, and I'm not belittling, I'm not trying to diminish the point, but it's like you could have had all summer to do this. Why not? Why do it now? I mean, the only things I can think of is in this new world, Bennett probably was able to fundraise and get revenues up. And so maybe, because you and I had talked about this, the more you listen to him, the more you're like, man, this guy just doesn't want any part of this world. And like, that was his prerogative. So maybe if it's not health related, maybe you do the move of, all right, I want so-and-so to get the job.
Yep.
And I'm going to set him up. I'm going to make sure the roster's taken care of, all that, so that he can have the best possible chance. And then I step aside. That's the only thing that makes sense to me other than health.
Yeah, so this is literally breaking as we speak that Tony Bennett is retiring. That's the phrasing from Jeff Goodman. And so that is something that will impact Memphis' basketball season. I mean, Memphis played.
He was at Media Days, right?
Do what?
He was at ACC Media Day, wasn't he?
Yeah, I believe so. There was no indication that this was coming prior to this breaking just now, which obviously makes you wonder exactly what's going on here. I mean, this is one of the very few active coaches in college basketball with a national title. And he's at one of those schools where, as you mentioned, Jeffrey, the landscape has changed a lot over the last 5 years. UVA is an institution with high academic standards, an alumni base that is perhaps not all that well equipped.
And exceptionally high self-esteem.
Right, and an alumni base that isn't super well equipped to fund a high dollar NIL program. So it's gotten increasingly more difficult.
They are capable. They choose not to. They certainly have the money.
Well, that's true. They just funnel it in other directions, I suppose. And look, like, let's wait for more clarity to come out here. Could it be that he's retiring at the end of the season, and maybe Jeff Goodman, you know, doesn't include that information off the bat, right? So, like, I'm sure Matt Norlander, my colleague, will be on this pretty quickly.
That is true. To your point, it does not say effective immediately.
Right. So there's obviously something to marinate on here, but it will impact Memphis if this is effective immediately, because, you know, when you go to KenPom and you look at the games that Memphis is expected to win and expected to lose according to their projections, the Virginia game is one of those toss-ups where it's almost like a dead heat. And, you know, KenPom has Memphis winning by one over Virginia. Well, that's like a massive game for Memphis. It's one of several, you know, potential quad one opportunities. And, I mean, that's really gonna impact, you know, kind of where they're at a month and a half into the season.
I'll tell you what was interesting about KenPom, and like, I understand it's math. It is staggering to see essentially his computer would have Memphis favored in all but two games, and it's still 21-8. Now, that also shows the level of difficulty of the non-conference, because I think this computer has it 14-4 in league play, which is two games better than anyone else in league play. What did you think on Wednesday? And again, with the caveat of, it was an exhibition. Penny even said afterwards, hey, you know, we didn't treat it like it was the first game. We didn't trap. We didn't run our stuff defensively. He was implying, and I said, I can choose to take him at his word on this one. Like, they didn't, you know, they treated it like an exhibition game, a scrimmage. What did you make of it?
Yeah, it was equal parts encouraging, plenty of concerns. Nothing bad can come from playing an October exhibition against a really good team.
Yeah.
And I told Gabe this, but barring a catastrophic injury, there's nothing bad that can come from testing yourself against a really high quality team at this point in the season. And then you throw in the fact that it's for a great cause. I mean, it's a win-win-win all the way around. Nothing bad can come from it whatsoever. I think it's especially important, too, though, that Memphis gets these exhibitions under its belt, because there is no Lemoyne-Owen on the exhibition schedule. In fact, once you get into the regular season schedule, one thing that sticks out to me about this Memphis slate, you know, there is no Austin Peay. There is no Jackson State. Even some of the quote-unquote mid-major or lower-tier teams on this schedule are pretty good, like Ohio, picked to win the MAC, according to Blue Ribbon. You got San Francisco, picked to finish fourth in the WCC ahead of Washington State, ahead of Oregon State. And then you go down even into December with Louisiana Tech and Arkansas State. Both those teams were picked to win their league. and then virtually everybody else is an NCAA tournament team. So you have to have some of these games to get a few reps, to get a look at your team. And so if for no other reason than that, I thought it was really beneficial.
To your point, Cobb, the worst teams on their schedule are in conference play.
Right. It's so interesting to me when you look at Memphis's schedule. I got to imagine it's one of the top five toughest non-conference schedules in college basketball. I used to crunch those numbers. I've not done it yet this year, but I can almost assure you that it is, because there are no quad four games on here. There's a ton of quad one. It's like most teams have an easy non-con and then a tough conference schedule. Memphis is the inverse. Like, you have to build your NCAA tournament resume in November and December, and then just kind of hang on from there. And so that's what Memphis has to do. And so that's why it's important that they've got those exhibition games. I thought Jared Harris looked good. I thought obviously PJ Haggerty stuffed the stat sheet in sort of quiet ways. Tyrese Hunter looked comfortable. And then in the second half, it was like, you know, a team that hadn't really played any real games together and kind of just got a little bit flustered. I mean, I don't know. Like, I don't say that as any sort of indictment on where they're going. It's just, that's kind of what you expect, is it not? When Nick Jourdain's the only returner, and, you know, for what it's worth, I thought he looked pretty good.
I thought, for the most part, I saw what I wanted to see. I think they're clearly going to be, I don't think it's lip service when they've said all summer they want a team that's more to Penny's liking. I can see where that team would very much be in his liking. They are not going to shoot the basketball well. That seems very clear to me. But as you and I have talked about, there's plenty of really good college basketball teams that don't shoot the basketball very well.
Well, Colby Rogers ain't going to go.
My other thing is, because if you looked at, not trying to make too much out of the exhibition, but if you looked at if you just went to Stat Broadcast and you looked at the side by side of kind of every number that matters, almost every number was even with North Carolina, with the exception of one. Carolina made five more threes, and they basically took a similar number. And there's the difference in your game. I do not think Colby Rogers... It is fair to me to say I expect him to shoot better than 2 for 11.
And three. Part of it's getting in a rhythm offensively as a team. Because sure, when you get in a rhythm offensively as a team, better looks come naturally. There were not open looks coming naturally in the flow of an offense for Memphis. And part of that very well may have been that they aren't going to show their stuff against a North Carolina team that they're likely to play against in Maui, right? Like, why would you do that if you were in a football preseason game, for example, in the NFL against a team that you were going to play in week three? You wouldn't go out there and run your concepts against that team and give them a look at what you're doing. You're going to keep it vanilla. And so from that standpoint, athletically, you were able to see them go out there and compete against one of the Blue Bloods. Granted, of course, North Carolina did not have RJ Davis, but you didn't look. And I'll say this too: Jared Harris looked like the best freshman on the floor.
Yeah,
North Carolina's got Drake Powell and Ian Jackson, who are 5-star guys that are supposed to start playing pretty significant roles for UNC out of the gate. But I thought Jared Harris looked as good or better than those guys. So there were things to be encouraged by. The playing through Dane Danger thing feels like it has a long way to go before that's going to be effective.
Yeah.
So that was a knock.
And that might be an if.
Right. Hope they don't throw in the towel on that, like, right out of the gate. But that's something that's going to be a work in progress. But I mean, to his credit, like, he was still active defensively and active on the boards. You know, in the first half, Memphis was dominating on the boards. They were getting second chances. North Carolina was not getting second chances, and then felt like that sort of diminished in the second half in a way that kind of opened the door for UNC to take control of the game.
All right, let's take a quick break. Let's talk about these topics and more with Jason Smith next, right here on Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. This month is Golftoberfest at Birdies. Book online, enjoy half off standard golf rates all month long. Now's the time to book your holiday party or event at Birdies. Dates are already filling up, but as long as you reserve in October, even if your event is in November or December, you will still get the Golftoberfest pricing. GolfAtBirdies.com. Don't forget, on Saturday, they will be supporting Breast Cancer Awareness Month. First 100 people to order a beer or delicious cocktail will receive a Birdie's t-shirt. Also, 10% of all receipts will go to Courage Through Cancer all Saturday. They'll be open at 9 a.m. on both Saturday and Sunday, so get on out there and support a good cause on Saturday. Jason Smith, the co-host of the Jason and John Show, weekdays right here on 92.9 FM ESPN, co-hosting by himself all week. Jason, did you have Tony Bennett retiring on a random Thursday in October on your bingo card?
No, not at all. And in fact, I've been so tied up with bathroom renovations, you are literally breaking this news to me.
Well, in fairness, Cobb broke it to me in the middle of the list.
Wait a minute. I thought we were changing the way we play. What are you guys talking about? Tony Bennett is not leaving, did not retire. What, you're shot. I'm literally, my mouth, my jaw has hit the floor. What?
Yeah, it's true, man. Yeah. Memphis plays Virginia in December.
Yeah,
there will be somebody other than Tony Bennett on the sideline for the Cavaliers.
Why did he has these? What have we? Has it? When did this break? First of all,
about 10 minutes ago. Jeff Goodman was first with it, and then Virginia has announced it, and they're saying there will be a press conference at 10 Central, 11 Eastern tomorrow for him to explain it. Which, if it were scandal related, are you giving the guy the platform to do a press conference on it? I kind of doubt that. It seems like this might be his decision. And then you'll, of course, wonder the reasons why, because as Jeffrey pointed out, he was at the ACC Basketball Media Day just last week.
Yes, and we were discussing in terms of Virginia what you said. I mean, the talk was we were going to see a different offense than what they've run, which frankly hasn't. You know, it's antiquated now when you talk about, what's being run in college basketball. More importantly, what young kids are used to running. And Bennett's system has produced a national championship, and you can say the guy can run whatever he wants to. But college basketball sort of passed that offense by. So I was expecting and really couldn't wait to see, okay, what's going to be the new wrinkle from Tony Bennett as he sort of modernizes things, at least offensively. So I'm as shocked as anybody. I cannot think. You know, I'm with you, Cobb. No way this is a scandal. I would certainly hope not. And certainly the way, what we know about Tony Bennett, you wouldn't think as much. And then, and again, you're going to give him the opportunity tomorrow. So, no, I just wonder, it's so close to the season. And as you guys pointed out, you were at media days, and it's so the commitment is there. What changed? And, you're right here weeks before the start of the season. So, I'm as shocked as anybody, and listen, that's one of because it's on the road, that's one of Memphis's premier games in that non-conference schedule. Maybe one of those, again, because it's a road matchup, one of those one of those top tier games on your resume. And so, yeah, what becomes of that? And I imagine this late in the game, maybe you promote somebody, maybe that's what Tony wants, but obviously I have a ton of questions. Following some pretty shocking news. I wasn't ready for you guys. Come on, break that to me there, Jeffrey. You got my mouth on the floor.
So, to me, it's one of two things, because I agree. This isn't the thing that would truly surprise me is if it's scandal. So that would truly surprise me. But I also agree, if it's scandal, it doesn't break like this. Virginia controls that message, gets that out there. And you're also not hosting a press conference to let him talk. It's either one of two things to me. It's health, which I lean against, because usually when it is something health related, it's noted. Like, even if it's not disclosing what the issue, it's like, hey, he's stepping down for health reasons, whatnot. Like, that's usually included. We've not seen that yet.
No.
I think what it is, and I think we're going to start to see this more, in this new day and age, if you've got your assistant and you got your guy that you want to get the gig, rather than have him, you step down after a disappointing year and have that guy go and try to beg everyone to get money, you could talk me into something that resembles this. Tony, because he sounded all year like a guy that had enough. All right, I'm going to get the roster right. I'm going to go do the fundraising. We're going to make sure whoever we pick is going to have the best shot. And then you step aside right before the season starts. You could talk me into something like that making sense.
And 55 years old, this could be a health issue, but he's certainly not, if we're talking about, heart issues have bothered some coaches, he doesn't come across and never has as that sort of intense guy, like in Urban Meyer, for example. Tony's probably one of the calmest guys in college basketball. However, with health situations, could be anything else. At 55 years old, though, I just wonder, is it what we saw from, I wonder, just thinking this through, how much of it is, you know, what we saw from Jay Wright and you know, go a little bit older, yeah. Coach K and some of these others that have moved on and said, you know, that this is not what I signed up for. You know, that this change now, this NIL world, you know, it's not what I got into it for, certainly. And so, you know, we're only talking a few years ago how much different it was. And so maybe there's that part of it. You know, 3 weeks before the season, Tony Bennett has to consider what this means to his players who are hoping to have, obviously, a great season this season, not looking to sort of, you know, in a way rebuild, even though hopefully that roster will remain intact, but rebuild with a new coach. And sure, my guess is, to your point, it's got to be, you would think, if I'm Tony Bennett and I'm doing it 3 weeks before the season starts, there must be a plan of, I'm going to keep a voice that they, you know, pass this over to a voice that they know and see where it goes from there. But in terms of reasons why, I just wonder if maybe this goes back to, barring health, if maybe it's just the state of the game. And Tony Bennett strikes me as one of those old school coaches, you know, that when he walked into a room 5, 6 years ago and NIL wasn't the first question out of the kid's mouth and some of these kids that he's recruiting, you know, obviously, and right after the national championship, that's one thing. But now, you know, maybe Tony just doesn't like the nature of the business of college basketball now. That's something we've seen. Again, Jay Wright wasn't, you know, that wasn't a deal where age was a factor. He just stepped away. Tony's got his championship. Perhaps it's just the game has changed and this stuff's for the birds. Maybe that's part of the reason. We'll see.
I think there's probably a couple other things. Number one, they're now making so much money that they can step away in their 50s. You know what I mean? Like, they're
100%.
The amount of money they're making.
He's paid, yes.
I mean, I don't want to get too cynical, but, and again, it's not impossible. But the other thing is, it's a lot harder to transfer in October.
No, there's no question. No, you're right about that.
I mean, I get it. They haven't played any games, so they could all redshirt and whatnot. But it's almost like, hey, you know, they're already here.
I'm thinking of the man that we've all sort of held Tony Bennett up to be, and the fact that, you know, he can't just be thinking about himself here. He's got a basketball team that he coached all and through off-season workouts and had talked about coaching this. I can't imagine he wants to hand that over to a voice that he doesn't know or doesn't like. You know, I can't imagine he's not super comfortable with whatever plan Virginia's got after him to hand this off right now and pull this 3 weeks before the season. So whatever happens here, I think, you know, we're probably going to understand it.
What'd you make? Ron Sanchez looks like he might be the guy, just speculating on my end, because sure, he does have head coaching experience. He was on Tony Bennett's staff at Virginia for a while. But, you know, you think about how this is going to impact Memphis.
Is he the guy that was at Charlotte and went back to be the assistant again?
Yeah, he wasn't very good at Charlotte, though. So if you're going based on his resume, he's not somebody who you look at and think, oh, well, he would be the natural succession candidate for Tony Bennett because he doesn't have a good record as a head coach.
Right,
but if Tony slides out now, then he's kind of his guy.
If we're connecting the dots, yes, Ron wasn't successful, but Charlotte's a horrible job. And all of a sudden, remember, he just pieced out, was it like right before the season started?
Yeah.
He could talk me into, hey, man, I ain't doing this forever. Why don't you come back, sit on this bench for a little bit, and we'll see. We'll see if we get you a real job.
I'm not. And Cobb, you'd know better than me. I'm not familiar enough with what is on their staff currently. What else is Tony's got? Those other assistants right now, and how long the majority of them have been there. In terms of, you know, whether it's one of those guys or the coach you mentioned, but again, I just can't see him passing this team off to a new voice, one that hasn't been in there this close to the season. I could be wrong.
What'd you think of Wednesday night for the Tigers?
Encouraged for the most part, and you know, there were certainly things to be concerned about. The front court free throw shooting, just between Dane Danger and then what you got to imagine it's going to look like for Musa Cisse, whose career has been, and at one point we know Musa's history. Penny had to pull him off the floor and talked about it openly, you know, during his first stretch here at the end of games because of the free throw shooting. And so if Dane Danger and Musa Cisse are going to be out there, whether or not they can stay out there, particularly at the end of games, is going to be a concern. But listen, what you guys said is right. You know, Kobe Rogers is not going to go 2 of 11, not with his history as a shooter. And not in his offense, you figure. There'll be better nights for them from a three-point standpoint. I only hit 5 in that game, as you mentioned, Jeffrey, and that was the difference with UNC hitting 10. But I thought, to go back to what you're encouraged by, it's the scrappiness, the potential for this team as I said in my show, to get back to what we recognize more from a Penny Hardaway coach basketball team. The reason Penny, and I've made this point all week, but the reason he convinced guys who didn't believe in him early on, like Pat Forty, that he could coach. Pat Forty came on our air, came on our show and said, I'm a Penny Hardaway convert. This guy can coach, was because the way his teams played defense over the first 5 years. You know, Penny Hardaway could get his teams, some of them with highly ranked prospects, some of them, you know, often he could get them to lock in defensively. And I think that is typically, especially with the kind of talent that he's drawn in here, when you can get that level of effort defensively, it's a sign that you are a good coach. It doesn't mean that you can't have a season like last year where everything absolutely falls apart because the chemistry isn't right or the roster makeup isn't right, particularly when you take a piece like Caleb Mills out of it. One guy that we know will sacrifice. Well, how many others do you have that will? How many others are interested in defense? So it all fell apart, and all that goes back to Penny. But coming off of that debacle of a conference season and the meltdown, you know, that it's and at least if you listen to Penny now, it's supposed to be a lesson learned. And so putting together this roster, how it would really as much defensively, right, making sure it sticks defensively is anything you're going to do offensively, because that was the culture here. That's what Penny Hardaway had established, is our identity here at Memphis. We're going to get after you. We're going to press you. This team, with its length, even though, yes, you're right, Jeffrey, and Penny said it. I went vanilla. Typically, we would have trapped Seth Trimble. If R.J. Davis would have been here, we would have trapped him. We didn't want to show him anything because we may face him in the Maui Invitational. All that's fine, but I thought that in terms of team defense, the pieces are there to get back to sort of that sticky pressing D that's forcing turnovers and creating offense out of it that Penny, you know, had for the most part over his first 5 years, held for a couple of years in a row. He was top five, number one in the country one of those years. Last year was unrecognizable. He's got to get back to that.
Jason, we appreciate it, buddy. Have a good one.
You guys keep up the good work.
That is Jason Smith, of course, co-host of the Jason and John Show weekdays right here on 92.9 FM ESPN. Whew, boy. I mean, I know it's my theory, but it's like my gut says it's some version of Tony Bennett trying to step aside and give his... Because now I think you're in this interesting spot when you try to do the handpicked successor. Number one, oftentimes if you think you're going to get to make the call on who the next hire is, sometimes you don't trust it. It's the way to, and especially if you have a good job like Virginia, if Virginia opens the job up, they're going to get a lot of candidates. This is the way you give your guy the best chance at the audition.
Well, a lot of people have mentioned that Dean Smith did something similar. Now, 1997, a long, long time ago, different era, but that led the way to Bill Guthrie getting a shot at the job. Ultimately, it didn't pan out in the long run.
Well,
but
the problem was Bill didn't want the job either.
he ended up with it, but the list, Chris Vanini, who covers college football for The Athletic, puts out a really insightful list that tells you about where college basketball is right now. Coaches who have retired since 2021, Roy Williams, Mike Krzyzewski, Jim Calhoun, Jay Wright, Jim Boeheim, and Tony Bennett now. That's a lot of really good big-time coaches who have left. And this sport is transforming, man. We are in the process of submitting our top 25 and one coaches for CBS Sports. Tony Bennett was on that list. All those names I just mentioned were on the list 4 years ago, and now we've got a totally fresh ranks. I mean, Dan Hurley's going to be number one. Nate Oates is going to be top 10. Like, this is a new
generation. Well, and Hurley flirted
basketball
with going to the NBA.
Yep.
Also, quick shout-out to Boeheim and his agent to getting included on that list.
No kidding.
Yeah. Everyone else retired. He got retired. All right, let's take a quick... Yes, it was time to move on. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll tell your story next right here on Jeffrey Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. All right, Cobb, for today's Tell Your Story, we got to go to Andre Drummond. He was on the... Let's see, what is the name of the podcast? It was the Run Your Race podcast. Their Twitter account somehow already got suspended. But this is a don't tell these story, tell your story. Cobb, he was intentionally missing shots to pad his rebounding stats.
Oh, the old Z-bound. I love it.
I'm not saying that he wasn't worried about padding his rebounding stats. I think he missed plenty unintentionally as well and still got the rebound. I just think he's probably not that great of an offensive player.
I think that what this tells me, too, Jeffrey, is we have too many podcasts.
Yes, I think that is more than fair. I want to thank Cobb for being with us, Jason Smith, Eric Hasseltine as well. If you missed anything, it'll be up on the podcast. Speaking of, Now, as soon as the program ends, for Dennis, for Cobb, this is Jeffrey saying thanks for listening. Keep listening. The Gabe Kinn Show is coming up next.